Ja. Ah, get Hoda and Christina. Yeah. Yeah. Help to light the candle and the incense, yeah. So that we can get ready for puja. Yeah. Okay, let us stand. Yeah. Sadhu. 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 Okay, thank you. You all can be seated. Then we will get ready for puja chanting. Let us compose our mind to develop the spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, then Sati. Mindfully, we shall recite the salutation. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Okay, you can be seated and turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We shall recite the Vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dityampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dityampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dityampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu mitacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Gannasarapatitena dipena tamadangsina tilokadipang sambuddhang. Pujayami tamonudang da sambarayutena dupena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana motamang vanna ganda gunopetang etang kusuma santatin pujayami monindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kusumena nena punnena matena ca hotu mokang pupang milayati yata idang me Kayo tata yati vinasa bhavang adivase tuno bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante Pali parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Now we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja aspiration. Puja offerings. Significance of offering of like. May this offering of like to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of all karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana, making of oral aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transferring merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect. Triple jam. Vadang pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang pujayami. Okay, you can be seated. And we can off the light. You can have about 30 minutes of meditation. Since everybody has been here before, and by now you should be quite familiar, you can straight away proceed with your meditation. You can train your mind by various skillful means. If your spiritual faculty are already stable, your meditation is very easy. Straight away, relax body and mind and silent. Then maintain that silent mind, that awareness. Then you will understand. On the line, am I? It's okay. Yeah. Okay, come in. Yeah, come. Join us. We just finished the puja, so now it's meditation time. You just join us. You can sit on any other cushion. Oh, you have your own. Yeah, very good. Sadhu. Yeah. You meditate before?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Oh, you've been here before. Then easy. What about your friend? Oh, you met him outside. So you've been here before? Oh no, first time. Okay, good. After this, I will give you some books so that you can understand what we do. So now that we are about to start, you just listen attentively. Don't try to remember or commit to memory. You just listen attentively and let it go through. Then later on, I will give you some transcript books, which has been transcribed out from the talk, so that you can read through them and have better and clearer understanding of what we are doing here. So, for the sake of the two new people, I will just give some instruction on how to develop the training of the mind to develop the meditation. Okay, you just relax body and mind, completely relax. Then maintain a proper posture. If you are used to sitting, you can sit. If you are not used to sitting because of age or whatever problem, you can just sit on a chair or on a couch. Then you just relax body and mind. Then silence everything. Just maintain the quietness of mind, peacefulness of mind, the silent mind. And you can keep your mind quiet, peaceful, and silent. That is the beginning of mental training. I will give you some brief description of what meditation is all about. The Buddha mentioned bhavana. Bhavana is a Pali word. Bhavana is mental training or spiritual training. This mental training, according to the Buddha, is required because human beings tend to have this heedlessness tendency. Their mind are always heedlessly lost in thought. They think a lot. The reason why they think a lot is because of mental hindrance. According to the Buddha, there are five mental hindrances. These are mental states that hinders the living being from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness. Like the word hindrance, mental hindrance, it hinders the mind from entering the meditative state, from being peaceful, calm, and mindful within. These five mental hindrances, the Buddha defined them in the teaching. After you can see them, we have typed it out. It's in the chart form. I will show it to you. They are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor or sleepiness of mind. Then the fourth hindrance is restlessness of mind. Finally, is doubt. According to the Buddha, these five mental hindrances will be there as long as the opposite five, which are the spiritual faculties, are not there. So the five spiritual faculties, they are saddha, or confident in the Buddha and his teaching. The second one is virya, spiritual tenacity or zeal, to walk this way, to cultivate this meditation as taught by the Buddha, because you see the importance of it, and this is what that motivate you to cultivate. Then after that, you cultivate the third spiritual faculty, which is sati or mindfulness, and that is the silent mind, the meditative mind, the calm, quiet, peaceful, and tranquil mind, the still mind, or they call it the true mind. Without this mind, you cannot meditate. That's why all meditation, they teach you method and technique is to train this mind, to anchor this mind. So that is like an initial skillful mean for you to develop the training of the mind, to be peaceful, to be quiet, to be aware within. So sati need to be developed. And we can develop it in many ways. First is the bowing. When you have the faith, when you do your puja, if you are mindful, whatever action and movement, activity that you do, you can maintain mindfulness and awareness. To be mindful is to be aware before the thinking, before the knowing. So when your mind and the activity move as one, or your mind and body move as one, when you bow without thought, that is sati. So sati need to be trained. That's the purpose of formal meditation. to stabilize this quality of mind that the Buddha called mindfulness or sati. Without this sati, you cannot develop the real meditation. Then when sati stabilizes, it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is a collected mind, the mind that is collected and unwavering. But it is still a free mind, it's not a conditioned mind, it's not in concentration or one-pointedness or absorption. It's just a free mind that is collected and unwavering, silent, peaceful within. Once sati and samadhi develop, the Buddha said, you can see things as they are, then you can awaken to the truth, you can realize the truth, you can understand things clearly. That's why the fifth spiritual faculty will arise automatically, and he called it panya or wisdom. When the five spiritual faculties are there, the mental hindrance will cease. So technically, you don't have to fight the mental hindrance. You don't have to suppress it, control it, or do anything to it. You just maintain awareness of it. When it arises, it only denotes that your spiritual faculties are not stable. That's why they arise. Yeah. So meditation is to understand these two distinct mind states. The first five is the mental hindrance. Second five is the spiritual faculty. So if you were to focus on the spiritual faculty, the hindrance will cease on its own. So when you have this understanding, your concentration or focus on meditation is just to develop the spiritual faculty. And spiritual faculty can be developed in a few ways, starting with puja, devotional practice, as taught by the Buddha, when we reflect on his teaching, especially the Triple Gem, Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. We chant the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, so that we understand clearly who the Buddha is, and how great a being he is, and how unique a being he is. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And he is perfect in wisdom and virtue. And because of that, your faith in him will be very strong. Then when you have this very strong faith, through understanding clearly who he is and how great a being he is, because he is fully enlightened, he can teach you to develop the understanding of this meditation so that you can awaken and become enlightened, so that you won't suffer anymore. That's the reason why when siddha or faith is strengthened through the contemplative understanding, through the puja, it will bring forth the virya, which is the second spiritual faculty, spiritual zeal or tenacity, to really cultivate, to go this way, to commit yourself to this training. That's why you can develop the meditation. Then when you commit yourself towards this training, the first thing you develop is mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty. That's what we are doing here. So now I'll give you some simple instruction to train the mind before your spiritual faculty is developed. I will teach you two skillful means, which the Buddha mentioned as mind sweeping method, followed by metta or loving kindness, to stabilize the silent mind, the peaceful mind. Then after that, I will tie in with anapanasati or mindfulness of the in and out breath to really anchor the mind so that this mindfulness can become very stable. So that it can accumulate into samadhi, leading to basati or tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind and the silent mind, which is the meditative mind. Okay, now I will teach you the skillful means. Again, relax body and mind completely. close your eyes, maintain a straight back. Make sure your backbone is straight. Then maintain attentiveness or awareness at your forehead. Just feel, don't think, just feel. You can detect any tension, any tightness or any stress within. You just relax them, relax, relax and relax. Feel them soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down to your eye muscle. Do the same. Feel if there is any tension, tightness or stress within your eye muscle. Relax them completely. Relax, relax and relax. Feel it soothingly relax. Then you move your attention down to your facial muscle. Feel each and every strand of your facial muscle. And again, relax them all. Then in order to assist you further to develop the relaxation, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, you have joy. When you have joy, your mind, your facial muscle relax naturally. Well, when you are happy, when you have this joy, you will be peaceful, you will relax naturally. So this radiant smile will help you. Then after that, you radiate this love or metta, starting with yourself. You can recite following what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. As you recite, you must feel your entire body and mind having this well-being and happiness within. You can repeat once or twice. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May it too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Feel it, feel the body and mind without suffering. May it too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May it also be free from all harm and danger. Then may there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within all hearts. Then you can radiate this same metta to all your loved ones. May all my loved ones, including your parents, your spouse, your children, your brother, sister, and your good friend, or your good neighbor, or whomsoever that you have love for. May all my loved ones too be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both mental and physical suffering. May their body and mind too be free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can extend this metta to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, and all Dhamma friends or Kayanamitas who are meditating here, may they all too be well, happy and peaceful always. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they too be free from all harm and danger. May their body and mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can extend this metta or love to all beings. May all beings within the whole of Subangjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, and all beings throughout the solar system, our galaxy, our Milky Way, extending towards the whole universe. May all beings within the entire existence, known and unseen and unseen, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy, free from all harm and danger. May their minds stay still, be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May their body and mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within all their hearts. By now you should be more calm, more peaceful. Then you come back to your facial muscles, silence everything and just feel. Then relax the facial muscle, sweep it down. Relax and just feel. Then move your attention down to your neck, feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then you sweep your mind down to your heart area or your chest area. This is a very important location within your physical body. This is where your life force arises and passes away. This is where the seat of consciousness arises and passes away. This is where the nature lies. So you just silence everything and just feel your chest area or your heart area. You can detect any vibration or even your heartbeat. You just silence everything and just stay there. Don't do anything, just be with it. Maintain awareness, peacefulness, silence. But if you are new, you don't have the ability to feel, your mindfulness is not sensitive enough and stable enough, it's okay. Then you can, like, you feel your forehead, now you feel your heart area. You just relax, relax, and relax. Feel it soothingly, relax. As you do this, one day when your mindfulness stabilizes, you will be able to feel all the vibration there, including your heartbeat. Then you can stay there, rest there, and develop the stability of mindfulness. For the time being, if you don't have the ability, it's okay. You just relax, then move on. You sweep it down to your stomach, feel, relax. Abdomen, feel, relax. Then your leg, feel, relax. Buttock, feel, relax. Then you reverse the whole mind sweeping method. From your buttock, feel, relax. Leg, feel, relax. You sweep it up. Abdomen, silence everything and just feel, relax. Then you move it up to your stomach, feel, relax. Then your heart area, do the same, silence everything and just feel, then relax. Then sweep up to your shoulder, neck, hand, back to shoulder, relax, then facial muscle. Just feel and relax every part of it. Then move on to your eye muscle, do the same, feel, relax. And your forehead. You want to repeat this mind sweeping method so that you can be more calm, more peaceful. You can do it when you meditate on your own at home. For those who have already trained, if you feel that you are already quite calm, quite peaceful, then you can move on to develop the stability of the silent mind or the peaceful mind, the meditative mind. You can develop anapanasati. If you have other objects of meditation, you can use them too. This Second stage is just to anchor the mind to something that you are familiar with. Whatever object of meditation that you are familiar with, you can use them. It can be anapanasati, or rising and falling of the abdomen, or even any form of mantra or chanting like Buddha and all those things. Even the Buddha's name, the Bodhisattva's name. In Mahayana, they call it four how. Yeah. Following the one recommended by the Buddha is anapanasati. Anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So this word anapanasati is actually the training of the mind to be mindful of the in and out breath. That's how you anchor your mind, because your breathing is always within the moment. If you can be mindful of that breathing, the in and out breathing, your mind will always be with the moment, in awareness, without thought. The mind that is in awareness without thought will be very calm, very peaceful. Then you will experience piti, sukha, leading to paucity or tranquility of mind or stillness of mind. The key thing is to relax into every mind state that arises. So you just silence everything, just maintain awareness or attentiveness in front of your nostril. Then just feel when you can detect your breathing, like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing. The moment you can detect your breathing, then like the instruction given by the Buddha, breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. If you are not familiar with this type of training, you will come to understand that the untrained mind think a lot. It is very heedless. It will wander off very fast. It cannot maintain the mindfulness of the in and out breath. So be patient. Every time the mind wanders off, let it be. You just have the patience to bring it back to your breathing, to maintain attention at your breathing, and again train so that this anapanasati, which is mindfulness of the in and out breath, comes to be. And it can be done. It's not difficult if you are patient. Constantly maintain awareness in front of your nostril, the breath. Whenever your mindfulness detects the breathing, just follow. The mind and the breath move as one. That is sati, anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath without thought. If you keep to the training not long, your anapanasati will stabilize. Then you will start to experience what they call a calmness, spiritual calmness, or spiritual joy, or spiritual rapture, which they call piti. When piti arises, you will like to meditate. Then you can feel it. Then what you need to do is just relax into it and allow it to stabilize. It will become more and more refined as you relax into it, as you maintain the mindfulness and anapanasati. Then breathing in, aware of this piti, peacefulness. Breathing out, aware of this piti, peacefulness. Then later on, it will become very subtle. From long breath, it will bring forth the ability of the mind to experience a type of peace, which they call sukha, or blissfulness of mind. And this blissfulness of mind will really make the mind very blissful. Yeah. But this is not an enlightenment factor. If you attach to it, you cling to it, you can get stagnant or trapped there. But it's a very beautiful mind state. What you need to do is continuously relax into it too, until this breathing becomes very different. Then like the Buddha say, breathing in long, the mind is aware. Breathing out long, the mind is aware. and breathing in, short, the mind is aware. Breathing out, short, the mind is aware. Then breathing in, calming the bodily formation. Breathing out, calming the bodily formation. All this, you will experience them. You will feel them clearly. Then as this breath becomes more and more subtle, as you relax into it, you will become very quiet, very peaceful, and very still, and finally, like no more breathing. Like the breathing has become very subtle. It has reverted to internal breathing. Like there is no movement. When that happens, you just silence everything, don't do anything, just maintain that peacefulness, that quietness, that tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind. That is the meditative mind. That is pasati. Pasati is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind. Then when you continuously relax and maintain the awareness, finally, when it stabilizes, the mind will enter sati. When the mind is in sati, then the beginning of real meditation can arise. When the mind is in sati, it can detect the subtle breathing. The subtle breathing will be like magnified, and you can feel them. It's very different. Then you will be very quiet, very peaceful, and very calm most of the time. Then whatever mental activity or movement, you will be able to detect them. Your awareness of them is very, very different. You have clarity. Then you can silence everything and use the silent mind to understand what is going on. You will come to witness and experience all of the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has described in his teaching. And this is how the silent mind develops the four foundations of mindfulness. Okay, now I will let you develop the training of the mind and the meditation. Then I will ring the bell after about 10 minutes. is okay. I will jump. Okay. Slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever mind state that you have trained, whether it's inner peace, inner calmness, or inner mindfulness. You have to develop the ability to maintain them for as long as you can. The real meditation is to make use of this mind state that you have trained to cultivate the daily mindfulness, accumulating into the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness, which is also part of the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. The quality of mind that cultivator need to have is apamada, or heedfulness in English. Apamada is a Pali word. The English equivalent is to be heedful, ever mindful, to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And this definition comes from Dhammapada verse 23. The Buddha said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, you combine these two, you have heedfulness. And the steadfast one, if you hold on to these two cultivation, you will be destined for enlightenment. So the constantly meditative, ever mindful, the steadfast one, they will realize the bond-free, supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. So this is the reason why the Buddha said you have to train your mind to have this quality of heedfulness or apamada. So since heedfulness got two partners, as you can see from the whiteboard, apamada or heedfulness consists of two parts, ever mindful and constantly meditative, means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. And this is sati, mindfulness or awareness-based meditation. And I put here most important because the Buddha, before he passed away, he repeated this advice to the monk. He said, strive on with heedfulness. Apamadena sampadeta. And that's the reason why, if you can strive on with heedfulness, you are destined for enlightenment. So, to be ever mindful, we need to train our mind to have this stability of mindfulness. First, you train your mind to be aware, mindful. Then stabilize it so that it can be ever mindful throughout the day. Then you use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And within the Noble Eightfold Path, you have your four foundations of mindfulness too. So this is what heedfulness is all about. If you are mindful and you don't use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, then it is not apamada. It's not heedfulness. Yeah. So apamada has the uniqueness of the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. And to fulfill this Noble Eightfold Path, you have to complete the path factor or samasati, which needs the training of the four foundations of mindfulness. That's the reason why Noble Eightfold Path is the path, or the fourth noble truth, the Buddha said, is the path that leads to the end of all suffering. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness, the Buddha also say, the four foundations of mindfulness is the only way to develop the wisdom to liberate the mind. That's why he told the monk in the beginning statement of the Satipatthana Sutta. He said, Ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu. O bhikkhu, this is the only way, Ekayano, for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for reaching the right path, for the realization of enlightenment, namely, the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. So that statement is very clear and very true, because without this four foundation of mindfulness, you cannot develop wisdom, you cannot awaken. And with the four foundation of mindfulness, it will lead you to the understanding of the Noble Eightfold Path. To be a truly enlightened being, you must have the embodiment of this Noble Eightfold Path factor. If you just meditate, focus on the four foundations, without the other right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and right effort, you cannot fulfill the noble quality of enlightened being as defined by the Buddha. So Noble Eightfold Path is the most important. Yeah. Within Noble Eightfold Path, you will have all the noble qualities of an enlightened being. We are all the Noble Eightfold Path factor. They are related to life, and they are very important to the understanding of life. Later on, if there is time, I will explain further. Now let us turn to page 6. We will do the invocation to the devas, then only we will continue with our second session. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Now we will chant the Pali. Samanta Chakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadang Dhamma Savanankalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanankalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanankalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Iti peso bhagava arahang sammasambuddho Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanaiko Pachatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Sakasango Ujupatipano Bhagavato Sakasango Nyayapatipano Bhagavato Sakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Yadidang jatari purisa yukani ada purisa bugala sabagawato sawakasanggo ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anu terang punya kita lokasati sadu sadu sadu. Okay, let's get ready to pay respect to Pajama. Betang percaya me. Tamang percaya me. Sanghang percaya me. Okay, you can be seated. Then in front of you, there is this small slip of paper. We'll go through it. It's a J. Krishnamurti code on meditation. This is a very important definition. You can understand this definition of meditation. Then you can meditate very easily. The title is When Thought Has Understood Its Own Beginning. This is very important. Your meditation must give rise to this understanding. Krishnamurti like to use the word thought. And for those who understand the Buddhist teaching, the Buddha's teaching, you will know what that thought is all about. Yeah. You have been using thought for so long. What's your understanding of thought? What is thought? Who think? What think? How does thought arise? How is it related to the Buddhist teaching? You will never contemplate on this. I have explained this before. Those who have been with me for enough time, they will understand. Anybody want to try to answer that? What is really thought? What is thought? How do you create thought? Of course, it has something to do with memory. But can you be more specific? What is thought first? And how is it related to the teaching? Anybody want to try? Nobody. Yeah, thought is respond to memory, like Suyan says. So that is a definition. So if you were to observe your own mind, since birth until now, when you are a baby, you don't have thought, is it? The early days. When do you develop thought? How does a baby develop thought? Initially, the baby is very innocent, very naive. It's just aware, very cute. That's how you see the baby, no pretense, one. Very cute. They look at everything, no word, nothing. That's why Kehun laugh. You see the baby, they are so innocent, so cute, so beautiful. Well, there's no thought. It's just, Then they respond according to their internal physical well-being. If they are happy, if they have food, they don't have the hot and cold to disturb them, they don't have wind or they don't have fear, then you realize the baby is very cute, very happy. But when there is something troubling them, then you see them crying when they are thirsty. when they wet themselves and all those things. But basically, they don't have words. They just, then everything they come to perceive as they grow up, they also have perception, but their perception is different because they don't have memory. They don't learn anything yet. There is no conditioning. But when you start to teach them, when the mother or the guardian or somebody who take care of the baby, what do you teach them? First thing you teach them is what? Huh? Teach them how to call the parent, you know, Papa, Mama. Then you play with them. Then you show them things. A, apple. B, book. And they learn very fast because they got no conditioning, clean slate. They just aware, listen attentively. Then they learn very fast. They use their intuition, their consciousness, which is very pure. So, if you want to understand thought, you have to understand the process of arising thought. So before the baby has memory, there is no thought. That's why just now, Sui An and Polian, they try to repeat what I used to tell them. So you must have memory. That's why the baby, when they start to accumulate this as memory, then they know how to create thought. Then they will repeat. Then when you can hear them pronouncing the word, initially maybe slightly wrong, but as they pronounce, they become more and more correct. Papa, Mama, then A, apple, or whatever dialect you teach them. So when memory starts to accumulate in their brain, they create thought. So thought is respond to memory. Thought is response to memory. Or beer. So this is how thought come about. Without memory, you cannot formulate thought. And what is memory? Memory are the things that you have perceived before. That's why memory is of the past. Something you learned before. Somebody told you before. Your conditioning, your knowledge, all these are accumulated as memory. So memory is the brain activity. All of your memories are your accumulated life experiences, good and bad. So what do you accumulate in this memory? You accumulate, all the rubbish. Then what happened? Yeah? Your memory will be full of rubbish. You know? And what are these rubbish that human beings tend to accumulate? Yeah? Your fear. Yeah? When you accumulate rubbish, like fear, worry, anxiety, some more? Anxiety, anger, your hatred. Anxiety. Then your anger, your hatred. Anger, hatred. Then? Of course, jealousy is there. Envy and jealousy. Jealousy and envy. Then you somehow have your scars of memory. All of your hurt, your unhappy moments. Oh, sorry. Become memorized. Then, your insecurity. Your phobia. Your unhappy thought. Your unhappy moments. Then, of course, you have sorrow and lamentation. Huh? Sorrow, lamentation, and grief. Etc. So when you accumulate all this, what happens? When there is condition for you to recall them, what happens? Yeah? Your mind will stir, will react, will have suffering and misery. Because the moment you recall all these scars of memory, or all these unhappy thoughts, these are all the wrong thoughts, because they are what the Buddha called the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. All this has the evil roots and is supported by delusion. That's the reason why it's called wrong thought. So wrong thoughts are thought that condition your sorrow, your lamentation, your fear, your misery, your anxiety, your lack of peace, your unhappiness, your deep phobia, insecurity, and all these things. So all this is what the Buddha called wrong thought. So if you accumulate all this rubbish in your brain, in your memory, you will give rise to all this. And the worst is your view. When you accumulate all these wrong views, your views and opinion, born of your conditioning, born of your conditioning, because you are so conditioned by your belief system. So this conditioning is conditioned by your condition, by your belief system. And what else? Is the spelling correct? Yeah? L? No, belief system is correct. I think this one. Yeah. So conditioned by your belief system, your views and opinion, then culture, race, etc. Belief system is what they call your religious belief, or the religious belief that you hold on to. And this wrong view and opinion born of your conditioned thinking is the one that gives rise to war, conflict, misunderstanding, division. And this is how suffering arises, because you accumulate all this. Yeah. What you should do is you should behave like a computer. Computer, they got read-only memory, ROM. Then they got RAM. RAM is whatever knowledge or memory that you already gone through. Because after you have gone through life, you experience all this, good and bad. your experience. But what are the things that you accumulate is very important. If you are like the computer, because computer need data, understand? You input all the data inside. Then they got this random access memory. And that one is useful. But you don't put them into your operating system, understand? Your operating system to operate, you only need those ROM. Not all the rubbish. The rubbish come in later. So when you need them to recall them, you randomly access them. Then you are okay. Then it don't give you problem. But if you accumulate all this and hold on to it, worry about it, it will give you suffering. It will give rise to problem. Because this accumulation is attachment, clinging, grasping, holding. You can follow. So thought is respond to memory. But what is thought is very important. First, like a baby, you are just aware. Aware means what? Spacious awareness. Spacious awareness. So the awareness is spacious. That's why it's just aware. But how do you create thought? You create thought by introducing in this space the content of consciousness. You know what are the content of consciousness? What are the content of consciousness? The Buddha already taught this before. This is thought. So consciousness and its content. Consciousness plus its content equal thought. Now you understand? Whatever you put it inside. When you are just aware, there is no word, isn't it? What is sati? Awareness before the knowing. Let's say you look at this painting or the Buddha Rupang. The moment you look, if you focus on this, what happened? Your awareness shrink. Understand? Your spacious awareness shrink because you have to focus there. Understand? That's why focusing create perception and thought. And perception is your content of consciousness. You input. Then because when you perceive, you recall through memory. You understand? Otherwise, you cannot describe what this thing is. Understand? When you really have the pure perception without the word, you see things as they are, there is no description. It's just an awareness, pure awareness of that thing, like a baby. You understand? But the moment you input the content, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, all come into play. Then you perceive according to what? According to your conditioning, your views, your opinion, your belief system. That's why different people will describe that painting differently. If you are an art student, you will describe it from your conditioning, your expertise. If you are a technical guy, you look at this. What is this rubbish? It doesn't really concern you because you are looking for technical things, structure. But this one is artistic, philosophical. So if you are not in that training, you will not understand. That's why the same thing can be described in many ways because of the different conditioning, different way of approaching things. So content of consciousness is what the Buddha called sankhara. You know what sankhara is? Mental activity, sankhara. Everything that your mind can do. And this sankhara is inclusive of feeling and perception, which is vedana. and Sanya. Sankara is all of the mind state, mental activity, mental intention, mental formation, scheming, planning, whatever that your mind can do. All the activity, the movement inside there. Your planning, your scheming, your cunningness, your whatever mind state, phobia and all those things, or even peacefulness, calmness. All these are part of Sankara. So the Buddha called this the five aggregate of form and mind. Mental aggregate. Five mental aggregates of form and mind. And this is the one that Krishnamurti used a lot. That's why he loved this word, the thought. And the whole of the five aggregate of form and mind, he just called it thought. Understand? So thought is the pure awareness or consciousness and its content. So when you focus, when you perceive, you shrink your consciousness and input the content. That's why you become lost in thought. You start to describe this, interpret this, whatever that you perceive. Then your mental conditioning, views and opinions starts to operate. Then you start to react to nice, not nice, pretty, ugly. Your duality starts. So all this is what the human psyche is all about. The human being is all about. Your mental and physical is all about. The Buddha called it the form and the mind. You have a physical body. You have a consciousness, the mind trapped inside. That's why the human being or the living being is called a five aggregate form and mind, because the physical body is one of the aggregate. Then the mind, the Buddha subdivide in the four more aggregate. He said the mind. If you want to understand the mind, you have to ask yourself, what can your mind do? That's why he subdivide the mind into four aggregate, which is what your mind can do. He said your mind can feel. That's why Vedana, feeling, is an aggregate. Then your mind can perceive. How do you know it's a Buddha Rupang? How do you perceive my voice? How do you perceive the world? Through your mind's ability to perceive through memory. Because you have knowledge, you have memory of what this thing is. Then feeling is your ability of the mind to give rise to feeling, hot and cold, pleasant and unpleasant feeling. All this is part of your mind's ability. Then after that, your mind can also think, become emotional, have feeling, leading to craving, positive and negative, pleasant and unpleasant feeling. So all this mental state, restlessness of mind, emotional mind state, fear, worry, anxiety, phobia, or even good meditation, calmness, peacefulness, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, the joy, the happy mind. All these are mind states, which is, they call Sankara. The Buddha termed it as Sankara. They are your mental activity, mental states, mental formation, mental intention. Whatever that your mind can do, your planning, your scheming, your various emotions, positive and negative, Sankara. Then finally, the Buddha said, not only it can think and give rise to all this mind state, it can also give rise to consciousness. That's why the last aggregate is consciousness. You can be conscious of what you see, conscious of what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And that's how the four aggregate becomes so powerful. And you combine these two, it becomes the five aggregate of form and mind, nama rupang. or they call it the grasping aggregate, upadana khandas. Upadana is grasping. Grasping because you have not developed the wisdom. You have delusion. And because of delusion, you grasp and cling to this five aggregate of form and mind. And the Buddha, in his first Noble Truth, final summary, he said, in short, he summarized all of suffering, he said, all of suffering arises from your self-delusion that condition you to grasp at this five aggregate of form and mind. And this is the upadana khandas, the grasping aggregate that condition your suffering. So grasping is accumulation, holding on to. When you accumulate and hold, you grasp. That's why suffering arises. Without memory, like baby, they don't suffer unless it's a bodily sickness and all those things. So, coming back to Krishnamurti's quote, what I want you to understand is this word thought, which Krishnamurti used a lot. So now you turn to your quote. Then I read through. Hopefully now you understand. When thought has understood its own beginning, means you live life using thought, and yet you don't know what thought is all about. You use thought since young until now. You have been creating thought, using thought, and yet you don't know what thought is all about. And you don't even know how thought come about. That's why it can have power over you. And you cannot see the limitation of thought. Thought being egoic, limited. Because from spacious awareness, you can be with the oneness, unlimited. But the moment you shrink and create a thought, this is limited. And this thought, if it's created by the deluded mind, through the wrong views, which is delusion or ignorance, this thought will become egoic. It's not a pure thought. It's an egoic mind. That's why this egoic mind is what the Buddha called the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind. And this mind is not real, the Buddha said. This mind has the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's not you, non-self. Empty nature. And also the Buddha say, because it's impermanent, it is condition arising, causal phenomenon. Without cause, it doesn't arise. Without condition, it doesn't arise. That's why it's impermanent. Dependent on condition, it arises. When condition continue to sustain itself, it will continue to exist. But when conditions cease to be, it ceases to be. That's why the Buddha said, whatever that is of the nature to arise, is of the nature to cease. Because this condition within the conditioned world is impermanent. It doesn't last forever. It's not a permanent and changing entity. So this is very important. And this is fundamental behind the understanding of the five aggregate of form and mind. And this five aggregate of form and mind is actually your thought. The second aspect, the mental five aggregate, is your thought. So now you look at the Krishnamurti quote, you understand. Meditation is to be aware. That's why we also have our four foundation of mindfulness, isn't it? Aware of what? Huh? Aware of what? The four. Oh wait, that one is the kula. But what I'm trying to describe is the Buddha's teaching, the similarity between the two. When we talk about awareness or mindfulness, it's always about the four foundations, isn't it? And what is the four foundation? First foundation is what? Mindfulness of what? Kaya, okay? The physical body. That is one of the aggregate. True or not? Then the second foundation, Vedana Nupassana. Mindfulness of feeling, also the aggregate of mind. Then, third one, Chitta Nupassana. Mindfulness of the content of consciousness, which is also within the five degrees of form and mind. And this content of consciousness is inclusive of the last foundation, Dhamma, Nupassana. Except the content of consciousness now is no more rubbish, understand? The fourth foundation is content of consciousness is mindfulness of the Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha. That's why there are five categories of practices under Dhamma Nupassana. You have to be mindful of the five mental hindrances, which is within your content of consciousness. You have to be mindful of the five aggregated form of mind. Then you have to be mindful of the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. Then you have to develop wisdom to be mindful of the seven factors of enlightenment. Then only you can develop the mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths to become enlightened. That's why it's all about mindfulness of this five aggregate of form and mind, the thought mainly. That's why Krishnamurti's definition is the same. Meditation is to be aware of every thought, no. Not just thought, no. And every read. What is it? If you don't have the stability of mindfulness, daily mindfulness, to be ever mindful, can you do this? Can you do this? If you cannot do this, means you are not meditating, understand? To Jai Krishnamurti and the Buddha, it's the same. Ever mindful. Ever mindful to do what? Cultivate the way for power, or for foundation of mindfulness. Means aware of every thought. And within the thought, there is a feeling aggregate. That's why Krishnamurti says you have to be aware of every thought and every feeling. Then what happened? You just aware, understand? Don't go and comment. Don't become the commentator inside there. Don't become the meditator inside there. Don't become the analyzer behind there. What did the quote say? Never to say it's right or wrong. And who say it's right or wrong? The thought that create their duality through their views and opinion. Your right and wrong is relative. Understand not? Relative to the person who perceive it. Understand not? That's why you have the English saying, I think Kehun will know, beauty lie in the eyes of the beholder. See, she very good. So if you say it's beautiful because beauty according to you, understand? But most people's reference to beauty is what? Physical, external physical appearances, understand? But if a spiritual person, if they can feel you, your virtue, your wisdom, your understanding, then you are beautiful within, understand? Physically, you may not have the beauty, but you are beautiful within because you have the Dhamma. You have the great understanding, the virtue, the wisdom, and all those things. So, right and wrong is a conditioned thinking, relative truth, not ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is what? The truth of thing is everything is just the way it is. You know why is it so? The Buddha always say, see things as they are. And I always tell you what? Everything is just the way it is. No right, no wrong. You sure won't agree on this. You sure won't agree on it. Because there is a relative truth, conditioned truth, conventional truth. Yeah, right according to you, understand? May not be right according to your...
Isn't something universal truth?
Universal truth is also a perceived truth, understand? Thing is just the way it is, means what? Let's say you, take for example, or an angry person, or a deluded person, or a very virtuous person. To you, you were, through your own views and opinion or your convention, society's convention, you say a snatch thief, a murderer, a killer,
Or they call it what? Those who cheat people's love one is what? Cheat people's love. Casanova. Romeo, what I'll say. You say these are bad people. Correct or not? You define them as bad people, isn't it? That's why judgment is judge. Depend who is the judge. Understand? We all in our engineering field also same. He said depend on who is the SO. You know what is SO? SO. You don't know what is SO. Not XO. Superintending officer. Under our contract, the SO is very powerful. And I tell you, engineer is terrible. They write specification like that or no? Your work, you must finish out the work to the satisfaction of the SO. You must satisfy him. Then only he approve. Not abuse of power, because you say satisfaction. That's why you say judge. You have to judge. So in engineering, the supervisor has to supervise. Understand? The SO has to make sure the building is built according to design, according to standards. That's why you need a superintending officer or consultant representative to sign off. And he is responsible. Well, he sign off. Understand? Yeah. So? That's why you cannot understand the Buddha's teaching, because you always go for conventional truth. You know what the Buddha say? He is just the way he is. No. He is just the way he is. He's a kid. He likes computer. Understand? Like I say, angry people will do angry thing. Deluded people will do deluded thing. Where got right and wrong? He's just the way he is. Understand? You are just the way you are because you act according to conventional truth. But when you have wisdom, you can accept everybody just the way they are. No need to be right or wrong. Understand? A wise person is a wise person because he has wisdom. At that moment, when you observe anything, you have to be at peace, correct or not? To be at peace means what? You are not judging him. You understand? You are not saying that this guy is wrong. When you say that, what happened? You are judging him, no? You have a perception of him, no? So how can you understand him? If you want to understand a child, like I told you at the retreat, you must observe him there without any of your memory conditioning to come in and interfere. Because you are using your standard, which is your own views and opinion and your knowledge or training to judge him. Then you say, boy, wrong, cannot do like that. But you never observe him. But he is the way he is. If I accept him for what he is, I got no conflict. Because no right, no wrong. He's just the way he is. Then I act. Act means what? If I try to understand him, I will observe him. Then like I told you at the retreat, if I observe a kid, I will understand that kid. Oh, he like that one. Yeah? He very cute one, very innocent one. Then if he touch something hot, which he doesn't know, the way he experienced that hot, I tell you, very cute one, he'll cry. Then after that, even his cold drink, you tell him, come boy, touch. He will never touch already. We have that memory. Where he burned before. Then you will know. Certain things he don't like. The moment he put in his mouth, he will just throw it away. Or he will throw it out. Then he got certain character on. Then sometimes you can find out he got certain talent on. He or she. You have to silence your mind and observe him through awareness. Then you can understand him as he is. not according to your views and opinion. That is what meditation is. That's why don't go and comment. Don't go and analyze. Don't go and use knowledge and interpret. And that is what meditation is all about. That's why in the Theravada they also use the word choiceless awareness. Don't create choice. Just aware. The moment you create choice means what? You create duality. You are lost in thought. Your thought is actively perceiving, reacting, stirring. That's why all the duality come about. No, I know. Like you say, human nature. To live life, you have to go through all this. But the conventional truth, which is what the world is being conditioned into, they will have their own, what they call society's norm. You can understand this word. Society's norm. You are in a communist country, the norm is different. You are in a democratic country, the norm is different. You are in a Western society, the norm is different. If you are in the tribal, what they call Orang Asli or whatever, or even the Maoris in New Zealand and all those things, these are native people. They have their own norm. Some they kill, they call what cannibals. They cannibalize. And you say, how can a civilized world people do this? They are just the way they are, no right, no wrong. So you have to learn to accept things as they are, see things as they are. And that is what meditation is all about. So when you can do this until your mind does not discriminate, you know what is discrimination? Like you discriminate the child. You not only judge, you discriminate. But to you it's wrong. You will not agree. That's why you approach from that point of view. You cannot change them. There will be conflict. But they want to do their own thing. And you have your own norm or standard. And you apply that standard against them. Just like parent against children. When you are children, you rebel against your parent. Then when you become parent, you want to discipline your child. Have you ever thought of that? I always recall when I was young what I do. Then I understand why I shouldn't do all this. But I also don't like the way my parents handle me. They are of the old tradition. They don't have education. They hear from society that if you study hard, do well in your education, you'll be rewarded. Because our Chinese culture is very strong. So everything they do towards us as kids is, if you don't study, you go out and play, don't obey them, they will cane you, they will discipline you, they will tell you off. Understand? Then there is this constant conflict. But when I raise my kid, I don't have such problem anymore. Understand? I observe them. I find out what their talent is, what they want. And I only advise them because I am their parents. I love them. I care for them. I provide for them, but I don't attach to them. But they are alive. Let them live. Let them make their own decision. You only, you like that one, huh? Ah, that is how you should live. It's not easier said than done. If you understand, it's really like that. Oh, is it? Oh.
She's in London.
Oh, okay. Accident.
She fell and then the bus
came. Yeah, quite common. Yeah, the sorrow. If there is attachment, but it's very natural according to you. Parents were sad on us. But without Dhamma, it's very difficult. That's why most people become very traumatic. afflicted, sorrowful. Very easy. The Buddha already explained in the Jataka story. His son was killed by the snake, you remember? Because of the smoke and all those things. Then he just didn't even cry, didn't even lament. Just accept the fact. Then prepare to cremate the son. He set up the pyres. Then he saw somebody pass by. He talked to that person nicely. He said, "Can you do me a favor? Tell my wife," he said, "today no need to bring food for three. Just bring for two. Then bring some perfume, white clothing." They passed the message. Then the wife knew one of the siblings has passed away. And she came. No tears, nothing. Then the king was around, saw the cremation by the pyres to set up the fire. Then the king feel funny, How come this person, somebody died, never cry or no? So he came around and asked the Bodhisatta at that time. He said, "Who is it that you are cremating?" He said, "My son." "Cannot be," he said. "You didn't cry. Maybe he's a very naughty son." But the Buddha replied, "No, he's a very good son, very full of filial piety, and very good son." "Then why don't you cry?" You know what the Buddha replied? "Whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. And what has arisen has ceased. So no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead." You understand? That is the truth. The truth is, die already. Without wisdom, not only feeling, the anger, the hatred, the inability to accept what happened. How can God be so unfair? And all this will come out. You become very traumatic, very emotional. Then you know what they will say? You know what they will say, the deluded one? "Why did my wife ask me to bring them here?" Blame the wife some more. "If she has not asked me to bring them here, if I have decided to stay back, none of this will happen." These are all the thought projecting. If. Not a reality. The reality is, happened already. Like car accident. Happened already. Let's say you buy a new car. Your husband drives. First day, reverse out, bang. You get angry for one. Already bang. Do what you have to do. That's why acceptance doesn't mean you agree with what they do. Acceptance means you will not create discrimination. You will not react and stir your mind. You are at peace because you can understand, like the Buddha said, you got right view. Whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. You have to accept. It's mainly karmic. So if it can happen, there are causes and conditions behind. That's it. Finish. No right, no wrong. Then you act. How do you act? You act with a clear mind. If you have anger, sadness, sorrow, lamentation, how can you act? You are so emotionally tied up on yourself. Your inability to accept what is the reality torment you. This is attachment, this is craving, this is clinging. And this is accumulating, become phobia. And you will constantly be haunted by what happened. Because the memory of your son, the moment that anybody asks you, "How's your son?" I tell you, the whole memory will come back. You understand? Or when you are at home, you see the photo, you see the thing that he used before. And your whole lot of memory, because you can't accept the reality that he is dead, will keep on haunting you until you go into depression. That is what depression is all about. You know what is depression? Cocoon of thought, constantly repeating itself, because you cannot accept the reality. You want it otherwise. And you keep on blaming yourself. if I had gone down to see him, this thing would not happen. If I had not sent him to UK instead, this thing would not happen. All this is not a reality. If, and the thought will project. And memory is the one that accumulates all this, because you become so sad, so full of sorrow and lamentation, and this grief, will cause severe accumulation. That's how they become depressed. And this is how living beings suffer. This is dukkha. You understand? We better move a bit faster, otherwise first sentence also don't finish. But tonight one is very good. There is something new for people to understand. You see, meditation is to be aware of every thought and every feeling. Never to say it's right or wrong means you don't judge, don't discriminate, don't arise the thought. Just silently aware. That's why I used to tell you, when you meditate, don't try to know. Silent. Just aware. And you will come to understand what? You continue to read. But just to watch it and move with it is what? Accord and flow. Just aware. Watch it means to be aware of it and move with it. In that watching, you begin to understand what? The whole movement of thought and feeling. This is what the Buddha's teaching is all about. What is this word? Understand the whole movement of thought and feeling. The whole of the dependent origination. Dwelling. Paticca Samuppada. You will start to see how thought condition feeling. Wrong thought condition, wrong feeling, wrong emotion. All this that I talk about. Whatever you accumulate in your memory. Because of wrong thought, it will create all this response of memory. So when it creates this movement, you will come to understand why the Buddha said, upon contact, feeling arise. Then when there is no wisdom, yoniso manasikara, when there is delusion, avijja, ignorant contact will condition craving. Because that feeling will become craving. Then craving will condition grasping. Grasping will be conditioned becoming. Then it takes birth. That's how the whole mess of suffering comes to be. So you will start to see how feeling condition emotion. Because your feeling upon contact, there is a movement when you don't have wisdom and understanding. Wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Yoniso manasikara. When you don't have the Dhamma to prompt you. Like last Thursday, Ingbi said. He suddenly saw this yoniso manasikara. Wisdom at the moment of sense experience. Wise attention at the moment of sense experience. Suddenly she saw. And this wrong thought that has arisen just cease. Because she already developed the contemplative understanding and the silent mind. That's why she said she can be still and silent when she is not doing anything, not talking to anybody, not interacting with anybody. He can maintain the silent mind. And that is very good progress. If you cannot do that, means your sati has not stabilized. And that is a free mind. And her question is, when she is talking to somebody, she finds it very difficult to maintain that silence, that stillness, that tranquility, the basati. I told her, not so fast. Because initially, you have not stabilized this silent mind. She has developed the ability to have that when she's alone. But in the midst of life, activity and movement, she cannot. Why? Because of the stability of wisdom. They are not there yet. And because of that stability of wisdom, which is not there yet, it can only deal with situation when she is silent and alone. In the midst of activity and life, there is this activity that constantly moves the mind. That's why if you are not ever mindful, stability of mindfulness, to be in that state of collectedness and unwavering mind, which is samadhi in the midst of life, you cannot handle sense experience. Your mind will stir and react very fast because your senses are fully engaged when you live life. So I told her, don't worry. Continue to stabilize the silent mind until your mind enters sati. Like I say, you meditate until the mind becomes still, capacity, tranquility, stillness, no movement. Then after that, when you come out of it, every movement, every activity, the mind and the phenomenon moves as one. Then you realize your mind has become different. The mind that is in sati is so different. Every moment of seeing is sati, mindfulness, just awareness. The phenomena, the awareness and the phenomena move as one, specific phenomenal awareness. Then when you are silent, there is no center, spacious awareness. You can be in that state throughout your waking moment. Then later on, you will go into your sleeping moment. That is the real stability of sati. And you can only do that when you train your mind until your mind enters sati. That's like the subtle breathing, everything. Then every moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought, the movement is in sati. The awareness and the movement move as one. That's why you can be aware of every thought and every feeling very clearly. Then you will never comment, say it's right or wrong. But you just watch, move it. Then you start to understand because of your craving, your wrong view, your self-delusion, your evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. It conditions you to become selfish. It conditions you to become angry, fearful, emotional. All this comes from delusion. Then you start to understand. That's why he said, in that watching, Krishnamurti said, you begin to understand the whole movement of thought and feeling. And out of this awareness comes what? That is the meditative mind. When you understand all this, the dependent origination, paticca-samuppada, when you no longer react and stir your mind, means what? You are no longer heedless. You are no longer creating thinking. Understand? You are no longer creating thought. You are no use. All the if is not the reality. The reality is happened already. This moment condition like that, things will be like that. And through your mindfulness, you see them all. When I don't judge, when I don't comment, I'm always at peace. Understand? Accord and flow. Then you can act. You act according to what? You don't act according to memory, which is not acting at all. Your memory is all this rubbish. Understand? Good and bad. Even your pleasant experiences is your attachment, your craving, your clinging, your grasping. But you act according to wisdom, which is true action. Wisdom is what? Born of cultivation of the Dhamma. When you are mindful of all the essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught under Dhamma Nupassana, under Chitta Nupassana, Vedana Nupassana, then you start to see the teaching. The evil roots, born of self-delusion and ignorance, are the cause of suffering, cause of attachment, clinging, grasping. Your anger, your hatred, your selfishness, your greediness, your lustfulness, your covetousness, your craving, and your reaction of mind, all come from that delusion, especially self-delusion, thinking that you are real. When you think you are real, what happens? What happened? The egoic mind arises, eh? The ego, the personality arises, eh? Then you try to own thing and have thing, correct or not? That is what selfishness is all about. Understand? Because of the ego. Because you think you exist, you are real. So you want to own thing, possess thing, cling on to thing, have all the good thing, thinking that it can really make you happy. And it belongs to you. But you never know that you are conditioned arising. The form of mind is never you. When condition ceases to be, you disperse. Your entity also ceases to be. That's why there is a very good Mandarin saying. Sen 不带来死，不带去。You heard of this before, no? Yeah. When you are born into this world, you come with nothing. When you leave this world, you also leave with nothing. So there is a very good Mahayana saying, Lai ye kong, means when you are born into this world, Qi ye kong, when you die. Then, in between, why do you lament over emptiness? Na mo si zu a, is it?何必苦苦啊 ？In between 呢、啊，为空流泪。You grieve over emptiness because you come empty, go empty, and you cannot see. Then in between, you grasp, you cling, you hold, and you grieve and suffer for what? Over emptiness. Why can't you wake up to this reality? Can you understand now?Yeah? Don't try. The thought is trying. Silent. Awaken to it. Okay, then we go on. And out of this silent, out of this awareness comes silent. So when there is no more delusion, when there is no more of this, what they call ignorance, when the whole phenomenal world is understood, when the five aggregate of form and mind is understood, their universal characteristic is understood,I used to share with you all, think also like that, don't think also like that. That's why you will stop thinking. You don't have to force it not to think. It naturally will not think. We have no meaning. What is thinking? Sankara. The Buddha already says, Sankara anicang, impermanent, it come and go. Sankara dukkang, the more you think, the more you suffer. Your thinking is grasping, holding, giving meaning. Understand?That's why teacher and counselor always say, when you don't understand, go back and think about it. Understand? Because they only have one instrument, the thought. Because they don't know there is another instrument which we call awareness, the true mind. You are using the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the conditionalizing mind. It's not your true mind. That's why it cannot understand. You are trying to realize.The enlightenment, which is the Dhamma, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. How can you use thought and mind? Ah, yes. Yeah. 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 Yes. Precisely that. Yeah, you cannot use conventional truth to define spiritual truth. No way. Understand?Because if you use thought to meditate,You expect to realize the teaching, the Dhamma, which is akaliko, according to Buddha, which is beyond thought and beyond mind. Is it possible? It's definitely impossible. Your instrument by itself is limited. It's the thought. How can you realize a state of enlightenment which is beyond thought, beyond mind? The timeless. Thought is psychological time. Understand? Eh? Then we go on.More beautiful thing. And out of this awareness comes silence. Ah, that is the real meditative mind. You will be completely silent throughout the day. That's why I used to share with you all. I may be speaking the Dhamma, understand? This form of my nature. You see me laugh, see me share all this. But do you know inside? Still, no movement. That nature is still, no movement.Completely still. That's why in the midst of activity, there can be stillness. In the midst of sound, there can be silence. No movement. Then who talk? Who speak? Who do all this? The nature is stillness and sound.The nature never moves. It's the phenomenal world that moves. And this nature is using this form and mind, understand? You call Brother Teo. This is the vehicle and tool that it comes to fulfill his vow, do his work.
When you call nature, you call yourself.
No. What is karmic nature? It's is the summation of all your karmic process, birth after birth. You understand? Every life you come, every thought you create and arise, got karma. There is moral causation, mental intention. So the summation of all this mental intention, of all your segmented life, they accumulate and become your karmic nature. Is that karmic nature you? It's a nature, understand? So the spiritual nature is another nature. All the perfection of the spiritual understanding and wisdom, the 10 perfection, they goes into that nature. And the nature is not a being. It's recorded in nature. But that is the unconditioned one, the different one. Karma is within the conditioned world. This form and mind, Brother Theo, your form and mind is subject to karma. Nature got no karma. The spiritual nature got no karma. Where is the unconditioned? Don't try to understand. There is no one to reach. When you realize there is no one to reach, then there is a possibility. But if you think there is a being there to reach, then no way. Is held by the delusion, thinking that there is somebody to realize that. Definitely, it's very deep. This is a samasambuddha. Okay, we continue. Silence put together by thought is stagnation. Understand? That's why this one is a condition. Silence means those who do jhana, those who do absorption, concentration. They fix the mind into a conditioned state until no thought. So silence put together by thought, that's why the thought-based meditation, you understand? All the one-pointedness, the jhana, the absorption, the concentration, the so-called samatha, samadhi, and all those nonsense. This one, the mind is also silent. So silence put together by thought is stagnation. State, you know what is stagnation? It's like a dead thing. That's why you go to Mahayana retreat. You sit there like a lock, go into one-pointedness. The Zen master come and whack you. He say, we have enough Buddha statue here. What is a Buddha statue? No thought, no consciousness, no activity of mind. Right? He say, we have enough for this. But that one is a condition of one-pointedness. Kill all the thought there, no movement. That is not a free mind. That is a dead mind. Because it's in concentration, energy field of thought. It cannot move. So he said, but the silence that comes when thought has understood its own beginning, means when you have understood all this that I have shared with you, what is thought and order, when you see all this in your meditation, then you see the nature of itself. What is the nature of the thought? The universal characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering. Every time it's like that. And because it's impermanent, it is empty. It's not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why non-self. Self-delusion is the cause of suffering. So non-self is anatta, the anatta nature. Then understood how all thought is never free, but always old. You should add in the word limited. All thought is never free. You know why is it never free? Because it is the content of consciousness, trapped within that very small confine. That's why it's limited. And when you are involved with the content, you are lost in thought. You lose your ability to be aware. You lose your own nature, your own true mind that can allow you to be aware. That's why when you are lost in thought, preoccupied with what you are thinking, you cannot be aware. That's why you will come to understand how all thought is never free, but always old. Why is it old? Well, thought is respond to memory. Right? Memory is of the past. Understand? So this memory is of the past. That's why it's always old. Memory is of the past. That's why it's always old. Means it's never with the moment. Let me go on. Yeah? This silence is meditation. Why? It is meditation because this silence is meditation in which the meditator is entirely one. For the mind has emptied itself of the past, which means it's not holding on to anything, not accumulating, not grasping, not clinging, not holding on to your views and opinion, your memories and your conditioning. And who is the meditator? Why did he say in which the meditator is entirely absent? Who is the meditator? When you meditate, who is the meditator? You are. Then who meditate? You always tell people, I'm going for meditation. Then who is the who? Who is the I? I'm going for meditation. Who? And you know how does meditator meditate? Those who don't understand, they use the thought. That's why it becomes thought-based meditation. And what is thought? You need the mind, which is the thought, to meditate. Right? So they ask you for method and technique, correct? Huh? Please teach me how to meditate. Then you give them a series of instructions, method and technique. So what do? They use the thought to try to understand what you say. Then they use the thought to meditate. And how do they meditate? You say, breathe in, breathe out. He will use the thought and go and look for it. And use the thought to breathe in and breathe out. When you do that, you are not developing the silent mind to meditate. You are developing thought, which is actively meditating. When thought is active, how can you be silent? True or not? When you are thinking, how can you be aware? How can you be silent? If you are not aware and silent to observe, to understand, you are not meditating. But the thought-based people is using the thought to note. Note what? Note breathing. Note rising, falling. Note the mental intention. Thinking, thinking, thinking. You are actually verbalizing. Creating more thought. You are not cultivating sati or mindfulness or awareness according to what the Buddha teach. The Buddha says standing aware, no need to think. Walking aware. Where got in the sutta and the book, the Buddha says standing, not mental intention, intending to walk. Where got such thing in the sutta? He just say walking aware. How can you just be aware when you walk? When you stand, when you sit, when you lie down, when you do all this activity in life, that's like daily mindfulness. You can follow. That's why the meditator, which is the thought, which is also the analyzer and the commentator, totally empty. That's why you must meditate in the silent mind, the true mind, sati, awareness, no more thought. That's why I use the word awareness-based meditation. The four important support for awareness-based meditation. First thing is relax body and mind. Relax into every mind state that arises. Then aware. Aware means silent. The moment you are aware, the moment you are without thought, you are already aware. You understand? So don't try to be aware. Who is trying to be aware? The thought is trying to be aware. The thought is trying to be silent. You go and try. As long as the thought is active, this silence can never come. That's the reason why you have to stop the mental hindrance. Where are the two shit? Mental hindrance and spiritual faculty. So in order to stop the mental hindrance, mental hindrance. These are the mental hindrance. You need the opposite five, the spiritual faculties. You understand? When you have this one sees by itself. And that is meditation. That's why spiritual faculty, through puja, through second turning, first turning, second turning, and third turning of the Four Noble Truths. So all this is the teaching. When you have the spiritual faculty, it will let you understand spiritual teaching. When you have the mental hindrance, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why when this is lacking, the mental spiritual faculty is lacking, mental hindrance a lot, you can never be silent. You try. That's why all meditation, they go and focus and concentrate. Otherwise, they cannot silence the mind. They try to fix the mind using method and technique to anchor the mind so that this mind doesn't move. And in order to do that, they have to focus and concentrate. One-pointedness, absorption, samatha, concentrate. That's why they focus. They concentrate. They kill everything so that there is no thought. But the real teaching is not that. It's aware. To be aware is very simple. The Buddha said, the moment you have faith, what happened? When you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, you are confident in that. Your mind is very calm and very composed in that because you have confidence in yourself, in the Buddha and his teaching. Then this one will make you peaceful, no more restlessness. Then it will drive you because you knew the Buddha is fully enlightened and his teaching is so beautiful, he can make you enlightened. That's why this virya, which is spiritual zeal or spiritual tenacity to walk this way and to cultivate his teaching, you will develop it because this is what you want. You see the importance of meditation. Then you straight away train your mind to have sati or mindfulness. And to train this one is very simple. You only have to understand. The moment I am without thought, I am already aware. So the Buddha teaches the four foundations. He says, first anchor your body to your mind, your awareness. That's why Faku San, the Sun Yan Fasi, he also knew. When we visited the temple in Taiwan, the student told us, that guy who took us around, he said, the master teach them 16 words for meditation, he said. Yeah. And it's very beautiful. He said, 身在哪里? Oh, sorry. 身在哪里? 心在哪里? Then relax. 放松. 全体放松. 那就是禅. That is real meditation. Means wherever your body is, your mind follows. That is kaya nupasana. Then relax. That's why the first support is relax. Maintain awareness. Awareness is body and mind move as one. That's why you pay respect, body and mind move as one. When you are doing the four posture, wherever your kaya is, your awareness is with it. Don't try to be aware. Just silent. Be with it. Just walk. When you sit, just sit. Completely silent. Just relax. Maintain awareness. The thought can come. Let it come. It will cease to be. That they are all dependent, originating, condition arising. Once you root out the wrong view, 10:30 already. My wife, give me the signal. So this silence is the most important. When you can be aware without thought, means you already developed the sati. And this one can only come about when you understand that the moment you are without thought, you're already aware. You don't have to try. So you just develop the spiritual faculty and just silent. Maintain mindfulness throughout the day, daily mind. As this mindfulness stabilizes, you realize from a heedless way of thinking, you suddenly become heedful. Throughout the day, you are just aware. Aware and cultivating the way forward. As opposed to in the past. You think a lot. You worry a lot. That's why I used to say, what are you doing in life? Moment to moment, life passes by. That's the only reality. What are you doing? Living beings are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. So much so that they never live life. But they can never be with the moment in that silence, in that stillness, to be fully aware. To experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. That's the reason why they cannot meditate. They cannot do it. So after you are aware, you have to maintain it, stability, if possible, 24 hours. Then after that, finally, when you develop the initial wisdom, you stay at the heart. Then you can detect the gateway. Then you will do the fourth one, which is trust. When you can develop this trust, you become beautiful. This one, you meditate without the thought. You just trust that nature. It will just do by itself. You just silent, relax, aware. And everything will just go. Yeah. It will just move by itself. Its own activity. Yeah. There is no thought behind. Nobody to direct the energy and all those things. No. Just silent, relax. When you locate the gateway, it will melt inside. All the yin-yang energy. It become pure energy. Then the transformation will happen from within. Okay? We better end. Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so this Jai Krishnamurti code is very good. Eh? Better go back, reflect on it, contemplate on it, and understand it. Okay, we will now do. Can. It's meant to take one. Yeah. You can follow. You can follow what I say. Oh, very good. Very good. You can follow means very good.
The explanation on thoughts that are discussed is a conventional.
Yes. Yeah. Sadhu. Very good. Sadhu, I rejoice you can understand. Where were you from?
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You will be stuck for a long time. It's all thought. Yeah. It's all thought, yeah. What's your name? Oh, Tsung. Nice to meet you. You can understand, I rejoice. My nature rejoice. This is very difficult to understand. But if you can understand, I will really rejoice. Means you have your past. Sure, you cannot understand one. Yeah. You sure cannot understand one. Oh, very clear. It's exactly the same teaching, except the word. People don't understand the word. Sadhu to you, I rejoice. Yeah, now you read different. Okay, I give you this book. You will progress very fast. Then the seminar book. No, the seminar book. To the girl also. The girl, you have already, yeah? This, Hatsuta, you have? Oh, good. Sadhu to you. Then later on, I will bring some other books. No, the seminar book is very good. It's a summary of the Buddha's teaching. Yes, our meditation also give to him. Part one, part two. Then you got the green book now. Who are you? What are you? Do you have the green book, Sia? You got it? Okay. Yeah. Enough already. Later on, you got any more question? No, you go into the website. All the talk are there. BrotherTeo.com. The website is very clear and full of all the books and all the recorded audio file and video file. Sadhu to you, I rejoice. Okay, we can do the sharing of merits and transfer of merits. Okay. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness and the meritorious action that we have developed over the past 2 hours plus of sharing.
We shall now share and transfer these merits to all beings who can receive them, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhavata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imena punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let us pay homage to the Buddha and all the worthy ones, then we can end.
Dear brothers and sisters in the Dharma, let's express our gratitude to Brother Teo and Mrs. Teo for coming so far to expound such a wonderful Dharma to us. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And also, Sister PG for fetching Brother Teo and Mrs. Teo tonight. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also to Brother Sui An and Sister Mi Fong for allowing us to come to their beautiful homes to learn the Buddha Dharma. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Two months will be transferred to Sister Pamatsuri's house. 2 months. So after next week, the next class in this house will be August 17th.